It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimera's Comics. Located in LaGrange, Illinois, Chimera's is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimera's Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I am your host, John Clark, which, with me always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And we have David Redfield in the studio again.
Hola.
And David has brought a new friend for us who we've been hanging out for a while because the microphones didn't work for like a good 45 minutes.
We had an awesome podcast before the podcast.
Yes, which no one will ever hear. It's the Lost Podcast. Eventually, they'll do a big box set and it'll be $100 and it'll have us if it was ever recorded, which it wasn't.
It wasn't.
But we have the Geek Girl Chicago in the studio, Lauren Rapsiak.
Hello, guys. That big delay at the beginning gave me time to drink this massive Frappuccino. It's all gone now.
Yeah,
I think I'm the least caffeinated in the room because I was constantly cursing at GarageBand. While you
guys... And the technical issues
I have to have two things in my hands because I'm seriously shaking right now.
He's like... double fisting and just twitching.
Dave looks like that Bane figure in the store where you squeeze his legs and he punches because he's just holding them out akimbo on either side of his body. One is a Mountain Dew sort of Red Bull thing.
It's an energizing fruit punch kickstart.
It's supposed it's to kickstart. Be for breakfast. It's their new campaign. It's a breakfast drink to complement your breakfast.
Caffeinated.
And apparently they got 1,000 people to pledge the money on the internet, which is why he has it.
Is that
it's
true?
A kickstart.
Really? No, is he just making a joke?
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I don't understand humor. I'm a stranger to sarcasm.
Half of the show is Steven just being a step behind.
I am. You know what? It's early, you know?
And it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon and you finished a giant Starbucks.
You know what? I was up till 3. So, you know, your 1 o'clock in the afternoon is my, like, you know, 8 in the morning.
You're up till 3 resenting Magic the Gathering players.
Every Friday.
Why do you do it? Every Friday. I'm like, just don't go. Just don't go.
I have to know what's happening. That's why I watch 4 hours of security footage every other day.
Do you sit with the security footage?
I watch a lot more security footage than I should.
Do you watch it on real time?
Sometimes.
You just go ahead.
If that one kid's there that I don't like, I'm just like, I'm going to follow this little fucker around.
Do you have like
You do them in slow motion, just go, I hate you so much.
So much.
Do you do replays? Like, I gotta see that again.
Well, the best
is... He's got, like, a pen so he can circle and draw, like, football in.
It's like Madden style.
This guy. I don't like that guy.
For all y'all have never been to the shop, there's
all
a
All y'all.
Where's it located?
19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. There's a lamp display right next to the door. And Stu opens on Fridays and is like... It's the thing he hates the most is the alarm. He thinks it'll go off if it doesn't reach it. You have a full minute to get to the back of the store to shut it off.
But it does beep the whole time.
It just does.
Like, beep.
But it speeds up when it's going to, like, banshee wail at you and call the police.
It's anxiety causing.
Right?
I always have my hand on the door handle every time you said it, and I'm like...
Yeah.
It's like a helicopter.
Right. Stu gets freaked out. So I was watching the security footage one day because I have no life, and Stu comes in. He opens the door, and he comes in with, like, all this shit he's holding, like, HeroClix and bags and a backpack. And he, like, turns. I had just moved the lamp display, like, next to the door so we didn't know it was there. Almost knocks over the lamp display, drops the thing he's carrying, catches the lamp display, falls to the ground, and then runs to the back of the store to shut off the alarm.
Beep, beep,
and it's
beep,
just like,
beep, beep.
I'm going to put that shit on YouTube.
You know what? This is why you're not watching Firefly.
I'm too busy watching security
You're
footage.
Watching Stu come in and out of the shop.
It might be a worthwhile investment of your time, but you've never seen Firefly?
Yeah, we've got this whole thing where, like, I can't get into, like, certain sci-fi. There's, like, pockets
Steven
of, like...
Steven has a problem with, like, long sci-fi shows.
You know what it is? I have a problem with commitment.
It's short. It's the shortest sci-fi of all.
That's what I keep saying. But 30 Rock, he did in like a week and a half.
That's true.
Like, did you every sitcom he will fly.
Is Tina Fey in Firefly?
She is.
Is she?
Yes. Yes. And she's very good.
I bet she is.
Christine Hendricks from Mad Men is in Firefly.
I don't know who that is.
What?
I live in a cultural vacuum.
I thought all men knew about her. I thought that was like
she's the most bosomy woman alive.
Who?
Christina Hendricks.
She's the most what alive?
Bosomy woman alive.
No. The only thing I know about Mad Men is that everyone made a crazy thing out of John Hamm because apparently the guy's hung like a horse. You didn't see that in the news?
You don't know Christina Hendricks.
John Hamm is a very pretty man.
I know he's got a jaw like the Tick.
He should have played Superman Phil Noto did a thing on his blog where he did a drawing of John Hamm as Superman. He looked awesome.
He was on Jimmy Pardo's podcast, Never Not Funny, and they asked him before Henry Cavill was cast on Man's Tale, and they're like, hey, we're hearing you're going to be cast as Superman. He goes, all I can tell you is I auditioned for Superman Returns, and they said I was too old then.
Yeah.
So he's like, now he's in his 40s. You know, he's
he looks like an Alex Ross drawing as Superman.
Like
he
could be, I look like that when I'm 40.
You didn't look like 20. That. I wish. I think if we compare John Hamm at your age now, there is no crossing that divide.
I think John Hamm looks exactly like he did from when he was like 18 on. He just looked like a full-grown man's man.
Once he reached maximum level, he's going to stop. Yeah,
character. That's it. He leveled off. And it's just like...
he got cap.
You know? Level cap.
Right, level cap. There you go.
They need an expansion.
We have a topic.
We do. We are 5 minutes John into the podcast. Hamm. My coffee is gone.
The podcast is not about John Hamm's penis. Although, you know what? I might just title the podcast just for that.
Dude, that's... There you go. Think we get some hits? I bet we'll get the most hits out of this one. This will be the most popular.
John Hamm's penis.
You don't see it on the show. How do you...
They took a
you
picture.
Won't see it on the podcast.
He was walking in like New York or something, and somebody took a picture, and it's just
of his penis in New York.
Well, he's like wearing pants, but he's not. He's going commando, you know. What? And it's like it looks like he's got an elephant trunk in his pants. It's enormous.
What I like is that how did you get all this information?
You don't know who Christina Hendricks is,
right?
But you know the exact time when he was walking down the street.
Well, I don't know the exact time. I didn't write the article. I just read the article and looked at the picture.
For a long time.
You've got to know what's out there. You got to know what your competition is.
You think John Hamm is your competition?
I think I'm in competition with every man on the planet.
So you think?
Wow, it's true. Everything I've heard about boys is true.
Everything you've heard about boys.
So
is
in
true.
Your mind, it's C2E2.
Yeah.
And they're having a madman panel.
Yep.
And a girl is at your booth.
Yep.
Going through the dollar bins.
John, we're both at C2E2.
And John Hamm walks by and she goes, which way do I go?
We're both at C2E2, John. I've got a booth. He's got a booth.
What's I don't think I have a booth.
Madman's a booth. That's a booth.
Madman doesn't have a booth.
Yeah, it's like they've got like a thing where they sit behind a table and they talk.
That's a panel.
I do that. I sit behind a table and talk every day. What does that make? Like, what's the difference?
This is what we get
paid millions of dollars.
So you're one step closer to being John Hamm is having a podcast.
Yeah. One step at a time, John, all right? You know, he's 40, all right? He's lived twice as long as I have. I've got to start somewhere.
You're not 20 years old.
Well, you know, I'm.
We're measuring decades, maybe.
We're measuring in decades.
If you were a tree, we would measure
all right,
you in
he's
decades.
Got at least 12, 15 years on me, something like that.
Something like that.
Something like
and
that.
And a lot of success.
Well, and a lot of success and better looking, and he's taller, and, you know, all the other. Then all the money. He's got that television show.
You're going to get there. You know? I believe in you. You're going to get there.
See, thank you. That's all I need is a little encouragement.
He's
John,
been
Jesus
on
Christ.
Thirty Rock with Tina Fey.
I know, and he lost his hands.
He lost his hands? Yeah, they gave him black man's
hands. Did you say he
loved? Oh, that's right. He had criminal hands.
He had criminal black man's hands that strangled him.
That's why I flew through that show in like 2 days, because of fucking...
I'm not saying 30
because
Rock's
of gold
not a
like
show.
That.
Yeah, it's gold, man. It's gold. So we do have a topic today.
We do have a topic.
Bringing it full circle.
8 minutes.
It's awesome.
So I was thinking about this. Lauren, your blog, you are going around Chicago. You're finding pretty much all the geek hideaways. And as I was reading your blog, I just thought about how this confidence has really emerged over the last 5 years of geeks. And I'm probably one generation removed from you three. So I remember I started reading comics in the 80s, and I remember that kind of thing of having to hide it, of like being on the train and like keeping the comic close to your legs so nobody would see you were reading a comic book.
Yeah.
And nobody would think you were weird.
Right.
At one time in 1992 when Batman Returns came out, I bought the Batcave, which I still have, the one with Wayne Manor that opens up.
I've got that.
I need to see this.
It's down in the basement. And I bought it in Midtown Manhattan at Toys R Us. So the box, if you remember the box is like two and a half feet tall. So you're like carrying this big, like, it's like bigger than a VCR box.
Yeah.
And
it's enormous.
A VCR?
Exactly. So I put it on the Florida subway and I'm leaning on it like it's my little desk and I'm reading a comic book and there's like, I'm like probably 20 years old and single, and there's like these three beautiful European women on the other side of the subway, and I can't hide this giant box. And this woman comes over to me, and she goes, "What is that you have?" And I go, "It's a Batcave."
it's the fucking Batcave lady.
Yeah,
and I'm on a train in New York. Are you really questioning this?
She wasn't worth your time.
No, well, and then she goes, "My son would like that."
like it's for my little brother.
Actually, this is interesting that you bring this up. I was just doing a piece this past weekend with Geek Magazine, and we were talking about the very same thing. I'm going to go backwards a little bit and say, first of all, that I can relate. I was very, very bullied when I was young, to the point where I didn't want to go to school because of the things that other girls were going to do and say, because I was a geek, because I liked Star Wars more than I liked, you know, boys, I guess.
And Barbie.
And Barbie, yeah.
Star Wars is mostly boys.
Star Wars.
There's one woman in all
and boys like Star Wars.
That's it's true. But yeah. See, that's what happens. You get older, and now all the boys that like Star Wars all along, they like you too.
Right.
But we were
because you're accessible.
Right.
Oh, I guess. We were walking
it's
around.
A girl that likes Star Wars.
We were walking around Chicago, and there are places in Chicago now, like the Wormhole Coffee Shop and Emporium Arcade Bar and Headquarters Beercade, which are these adult, you know, there's beer and there's DeLorean hanging and there's arcade games, and people from now all subcultures and all kinds of areas and neighborhoods of Chicago come to these places because it's cool now. It's cool to like Star Wars. It's cool to see the DeLorean. It's cool to drink drinks themed after Super Mario Brothers characters. My coffee was called the Peanut Butter Koopa Troopa, and it was delightful.
That's awesome.
That sounds
but,
good.
But we had this discussion saying now we feel like the coolest people in the world, because I think you can tell when someone, you know, got on the bandwagon and when someone was into this for their entire lives.
Yeah.
And as someone who's been into this for my entire life, I now have this blog and I'm seen as an authority on the subject. But I do believe, particularly in schools where cliques are still a strong presence and being cool is still a really powerful motivator, I think people are still picked on. But I think maybe the definition of geek has changed. You know, maybe Star Wars is okay, but now there's something else that is the geek thing.
It seems there's always going to be something I think people will target and be like, this is uncool. And I think that especially, like you said, in grade schools, I think cliques are very prevalent, or whatever that fancy word is, you mm-hmm. know. And I think that'll happen a lot more, but then by like high school it starts weeding out a little, and then college it's gone. Because I remember being in high school in like, I don't know, 2002 or 3 or whatever, and like wearing a Green Lantern hoodie, and people would be like, what the hell is that? That's stupid. You're a nerd. What do they pick on you? It's like, well, now fucking Green Lantern's like a movie.
Right. And, that bombed.
Right, it bombed. But now y'all know what Green Lantern is. And it's like, but I knew what it was and it wasn't cool. Or like, I'd wear a Spider-Man shirt and like, but then you'd all go see like the Spider-Man
movie,
right? And it's just like, but like, I can't wear like a shirt or whatever. It's just like, I don't know. It's silly shit like that. And it is frustrating because you get a lot of people who are now like, yeah, Avengers is awesome. And it's like, fucking, I've been reading Avengers for 20 years, asshole. Like, I know Avengers is awesome. You've only just seen the movie, you know?
But sure, I don't believe in gatekeeping in that way, though. I really like to believe that everyone who expresses an interest, whether they express at age 2 or age 20, deserves to be a fan and deserves to be a part of the culture. But yeah, nobody should be expressing superiority over each other. Speaking of, I saw a webcomic once, and it was about this very topic. There was a bunch of kids, like, in kindergarten playing Pokemon, going, yay, Pokemon! And then the same kids, one kid in high school playing Pokemon, and everyone going, Pokemon sucks. Pokemon's for babies. And then in college, everyone's playing Pokemon. It goes, yeah, Pokemon!
That's awesome.
Yeah. There's just an ebb and flow to it where that sometimes people are prioritizing coolness and sometimes they're prioritizing other things.
Well, there's a self-consciousness about high school that
is
so prevalent that it's like you're so afraid to do anything out of the norm. You know, I was in a very small class. There were only 30 in my graduating class, but I was still considered to be one of the weird ones.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't picked on as much probably in high school just because we were so small.
Yeah.
But I was like, there were maybe 3 of us that read comics, and we were known as like the comic nerds.
Yeah. I would like to point out, though, that even within fandoms, even within geek subculture, there are people that believe, you know, there's a certain level where you're too nerdy, you know. I don't know if I subscribe to that. Before, we talked about My Little Pony earlier today.
Yeah, the bronies.
Yeah.
And there are some people who might like Spider-Man that think a brony is the weirdest thing you could possibly be. Or maybe some people watch My Little Pony, but if you start dressing up like a My Little Pony, then that's
it's like
not
there's
okay.
a line somewhere.
Right, yeah. And so you can still be the geek, you can still be ostracized even within these communities where you're supposed to feel unified due to this fandom.
Well, it's like from an outsider's perspective, my roommate, she'll be at the store on like a Wednesday or something, and I'll have the same conversation 30 or 40 times every Wednesday. Like, Robin will get killed, and then I have that Robin got killed conversation, the exact same conversation.
Right, with everyone who comes in to pick up
that. Everyone who comes in, and she's just like, this is a weird thing you're doing here. I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, all these people come in to talk. They all come to talk about the same thing. And it's just like this weird environment where you guys are all into like this like thing. And she was making like a thing out of like, she doesn't have anything like that.
I don't
think
that's true, though. Yeah. If I go to my job, we're all kind of geeks at my job, but there's a certain group of people who will talk about the latest episode of Dancing with the Stars or the latest episode of The Bachelor. And you can all talk about that.
That's what I said. It's no different than, I guess, like people stand around the water cooler
or,
and talk about Game of Thrones.
Or if you worked in a sports bar where the business is very targeted to one interest.
Exactly. That's what I told her. It's like, this is just like, you know, the bartender at the bar by our house talking about the Bears when the Bears are playing and they're doing awesome. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's the same thing. It's like, they're coming in talking about...
If you were behind that bar, you'd be having the same conversation about the Bears. Over and over.
Right.
And it's interesting when you guys talk about college. For me personally, that was definitely where it opened up. I think not only were you out of high school where you're so afraid of being singled out, but also when I got to college, that was the first time, this is during the boom of the 90s, that was the first time a comic store opened that I could get to, that I didn't have to go like on the train and into Manhattan and go to Forbidden Planet like I used to do in high school. And that'd be my whole day because it'd be like an hour and a half train ride each way.
Yeah.
But when I was in Brooklyn College, Bulletproof Comics opened, and it was this I wouldn't even call it an oasis because it's not like I was having such a hard time outside of it, but it was just this nirvana. Like, as soon as you stepped in, you just felt comfortable.
Yeah.
And I got comfortable to the point where, like, 2 years later, I worked there.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so it was like, it was the place where I could go, I could just talk about anything, because you'll have these conversations that I still will from time to time. Now that superheroes are so mainstream, is like you're talking to somebody who like mentions a superhero reference and you're like, oh yeah, well that's like this and this and this. And then your depth of knowledge just goes past them. And sometimes I'll have that knee-jerk reaction of like, oh, hey, oh. You know, and then you're just like, oh, okay, now I need to
rein it in.
I need to pull my punches. Yeah, we're not going to talk about Jerry Conway today.
Yeah, you don't know who that is.
No, one of the things that's interesting is I always felt like the media, like movies or TV shows are things that always, when they branch out in whatever topic it is, that opens it up to the rest of the world and people that were like afraid to try to read a book or... check out this new TV show. Like once it becomes a movie or something like that, it's like everyone jumps on the bandwagon. The thing I'm trying to bring at is too much caffeine. I can't think straight. the fact that
too much Mountain Dew.
Yeah, Kickstart. Star Trek. Like when I was in high school, I was like, all right, I saw Next Generation with my dad because he watched Star Trek when he was young, and that was the one thing that the both of us kind of like did together.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, I was just like, Star Trek, I don't know. I it's not something I would crave after, but I just saw the trailer for the second movie that's coming out, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait for Star Trek. That's right. And that's something that I never thought I would say ever. And like when the first movie came out, when they redid it, it's just like that was the biggest buzz. Everyone was saying, did you see the new Star Trek movie? Did you see a new Star Trek movie? And now like Doctor Who. Like the only reason I got into Doctor Who is I went to a convention and I was like, what is this phone, like this phone box? And I'm talking about the TARDIS, but this
it's
is
on
how
the cover of Entertainment Weekly now. It's the best show out there.
And it's polling in TV Guide for like, they pick like 10 cult shows, one of which would get the cover, and Doctor Who ran away with it.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because...
And it's as big as like Downton Abbey. It's like those are the two big British shows. It's not...
That everyone's watching.
Yeah, it's not just like this is the sci-fi show that's got the core audience galvanized. It's like this is the big British show. This is The Office of 2012.
You guys are bringing up a main point, though, by talking about accessibility. You were saying there was, you know, one comic shop you can go to. And I remember basically life before the internet. I think the internet was a huge shift for people getting to sample Star Trek, people getting to sample. For example, I was an anime kid in high school, and there's one anime convention. And if you wanted anime, you had to go to Suncoast and pay $50 for two or three episodes on a VHS.
That was insane.
Right.
I remember I had two friends that were really into anime, and that's how I got into it. And they did a thing where it was like they were watching Rama. It's like Rama one half. But it's like, all right, I'll buy the first tape, you buy the second tape.
And
like
we'll
between
trade,
the two of them.
Yeah.
My girlfriend and I did that with Sandman.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll buy this trade, you buy the next trade.
And now... Yeah.
And then
now
we broke up, and now I own the absolutes. So who wins?
You go on the internet, and you can see this stuff, maybe legally, but you can see it for free whenever you want. And so more people have the opportunity to sample it and say, actually, I like this. Actually, that person who told me about it, who I thought was a geek, was right. This stuff is dope. And with the internet being so big now, you can sample whatever you want.
And Netflix helps out a lot. Like, Netflix is now trying to put more and more anime. And anime is one thing I'm trying to get more into just so I could be more knowledgeable about it. But it's hard, but it's great now with Netflix because it's like, what's this show? I'll watch 3 episodes. It won't cost...
It's not a commitment.
It's not a commitment at all. And then, because back then, the only thing I knew was like Dragon Ball Z, Evangelion, Rama 1/2, Dragon Slayers, and maybe a little bit of Gundam Wing. And this is like all the anime show I knew throughout high school. And now it's just like there's so much, you know, like Death Note and all these other shows you guys never heard of. But like now it's just like thanks, internet. Thanks a lot. And thank you, Wikipedia, for doing the best to explain what I just watched.
Yeah. Yeah, Netflix is how I discovered Doctor Who. So many people I didn't know were recommending the new one. And then it came up on Netflix. And I was like, all right, I have
give
time
it a try.
For this.
You might
and
know.
I did the series in like 3 weeks. I was caught up because it was – I did it like the month before it came back. I think it was like half of season 6. And I was caught up by the time that show came on because it was even easier than the way I filled my Star Trek holes 5 years before was going on Netflix and renting the discs.
Yeah.
And being like, okay, now I have 4 episodes I can watch. And I would watch that and send it back. And it took me like – I did that with Buffy. And it took me 6 months to watch Buffy. And it took me 3 weeks to watch Doctor Who. I mean, granted, it's not an equal number of episodes.
Doctor Who's a really interesting example, too, if we're talking about geeky things becoming mainstream and changing the personal definition of geek. Also, it's interesting to discuss how mainstream changes the medium itself. With Doctor Who, for example, I have seen a pretty distinct change in Doctor Who recently. With the Matt Smith episodes, the production value is so much higher. That's so much more cinematic. It's on this much bigger epic scale. And I hate to be an elitist about it, but I find I like it less because what I fell in love with was sort of the simplicity of like there
it's
are
like
puppets
the charm
and
of it. Yeah.
Weird British humor, and it was charming, and it was all about, you know, it wasn't about the grand things that you saw. It was about the grand things that you felt. And the way the Doctor's adventures made me feel, I didn't need CG dinosaurs to feel that. And so the new episodes have been really overproduced. And it's kind of interesting that that's what America is falling in love with, is not the Doctor Who.
It is like comparing the J.J. Abrams Star Trek to the original Star Trek.
Yes,
it's like, here's Kirk and Spock. You know, here's what we could do in the 60s on television, which, you know, didn't even have the budget, monetarily that it does now, much less the technology.
Right.
And here's how, when I first saw J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, like, my first thought was, like, that big space battle in the beginning. I'm like, oh, wow, this is how you would do Star Trek if you were doing it as Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you had the budget to
not
actually...
Not the same person.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if you had more money than to just shoot 7 actors on a bridge pointing at things, like, this is what it would really look like.
Yeah. And leaning back and forth.
Yes. Yeah. And everybody rocking at the same time. I mean, my favorite quote about it was when I was watching it. This is like 90s. I was watching Star Trek and my sister came in and she looked at it. And she goes, wait, so let me get this straight. Star Trek is serious and Batman is funny? Because in her mind, like they were both from the 60s. They were the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's just because that was the limitations of it. You know, but so my question is, I think this has already come up a couple of times. Where do you think that turn happens where it becomes mainstream? Is it the movies? Is it the is it the internet?
I was working on a project, and one of the ways to try and like pitch this project to people is you have to explain to them why this would work. And my pitch was the new blockbusters, the new summer blockbusters are comic book movies. And I think X-Men came before Spider-Man, correct?
Yeah. X-Men was the first one to really make money. Blade did well, but no one knew it was a comic. Everybody thought it was just a vampire.
Just a movie.
I think since Spider-Man came out, that's when everything just went boom. And Spider-Man came out, then then what, the next X-Men came out, then Spider-Man 2, and it just like exploded since then.
We got Batman, we got Superman, you know, it just kept going. It's like every year you're seeing, before it was like every other year where there's a superhero movie, then there were one movie every year, now it's two movies every year, now there's three, we had like four last year.
Now it's two movies from Marvel every year.
Yeah.
May is, I think like the first weekend of May or second weekend of May is the beginning of the summer blockbuster.
And it's Iron Man 3 this year.
Iron Man 3, and it was Iron Man 2 a couple of years ago, and Iron Man was, the first Iron Man was the beginning of the blockbuster summer.
Yeah, and imagine 10 years ago if I told you Iron Man would be like the big movie of a year.
There'd be a ton of people, you know, mainstream people who wouldn't even know who Iron Man
is. They wouldn't know who he is, yeah.
Well, you know, I remember arguing with my friend before it opened, and he was saying, it's not going to do well. I'm like, why not? I'm like, Robert Downey Jr. looks great. I think they have a budget. And he's like, nobody knows who Iron Man is. I'm like, Yeah, but I also said, Guy builds a robot suit. You're done.
Yeah.
The premise is pretty simple.
You don't need anything.
But you don't need a lot of continuity with Iron Man.
There's a lot of things, though, like going into it, because when I was trying to explain it to people, a lot of people were like, who's in it? Robert Downey Jr. is like, why is he in it? Like, a lot of people.
Because they could afford him.
I know, but
they
like, a lot of people.
They couldn't insure him, though.
A lot of people say if you want Robert Downey Jr., if you want someone to play Tony Stark and you want like Iron Man to do well, you get Tom Cruise.
And well, they were talking to Tom Cruise for a while, and if you look at the extremists,
I don't think
he is drawn like Tom
well.
Cruise in every panel. Yeah. I don't think it would have done as well, because I think Favreau thought of Demon in a Bottle and went, okay, here's this guy who's super smart and damaged.
Yeah.
And it's like Robert Downey Jr.
Who had spent, you know, 10 years researching the role of an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like he had done.
But
kind
who's
of
also
like,
really smart.
Right. And, he's a phenomenal
and
actor.
And Downey brought that sense of humor to it because it was never in the book before.
No.
And
no.
I think
the closest.
Somebody was saying, was it Bendis? Or somebody was saying about the Avengers is. The problem with writing the Avengers book is now that Tony Stark is
the loudest
is Robert Downey Jr., who's Hawkeye.
Right.
And then Jeremy Renner plays him as more of a straight ahead.
Right.
No
instead
nonsense,
of a guy who
like,
wants to pick a fight with Captain America and thinks he should lead the Avengers.
Yeah, Hawkeye was the Wolverine of the Avengers. He was the comic relief, and he was the rebel, and he was the outside thinker. And once basically Downey's gonna be Iron Man, even if they recast him for an Iron Man 4.
Yeah.
Downey is going to be Iron Man to people like Christopher Reeve was Superman.
Yeah. Right.
Whoever steps into that, even if they do seven Tony Starks, then he's going to be the Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Like nobody's going to blow
and
that.
And what's interesting is like, you know, if the direction of where Iron Man was going, as soon as he played him in the movie, it completely shifted. And now like you said, it's like, you know, my roommate says the same thing. She's like, "Well, I don't want to read the Avengers because they're not going to write him like Robert Downey Jr." It's like, well, they didn't use to write him like Robert Downey Jr., but now all the writers are writing him like Robert Downey Jr. because he has such an impact on that character.
And it's like, well, when we met Mark Waite at a signing, we asked him about Indestructible Hulk. And he said, how are you writing the Hulk? And he said, I'm writing him like Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's just like, I saw that like, movie and it made
like,
it work.
Yeah,
because he said, and it's the same thing I was thinking was like, you know, Eric Bana played him and it was like stupid. And then
Ed Norton
did a good job. But then it wasn't until Ruffalo did it where I'm like, oh, now I get the Hulk. Now I see why this character is like interesting. Because before it's like I was never really into the Hulk. I never, other than Peter David's run, there was nothing else I really wanted to read. And then Mark Ruffalo comes on. It's like, oh, this is awesome. And then Mark Waid starts the book and he's writing him like that. And it's like, it's a really, he figured out how to make that character work for like a wider audience than the Hulk originally was, in, you know, working
intended for.
Yeah, intended for.
So Dave, I agree that Spider-Man's like the big moment, but I think you could back it. I think you could back it up a year before that and point to Lord of the Rings, because that's something that was always seen as this. It was fantasy based, which is a much smaller community of geekdom, and it had been revered for so long, and the director wasn't one of those people who revered it, which is why he's like, I'm going to make a 9-hour movie of this.
Yeah.
And when people saw Fellowship of the Ring, they didn't know what to make of it. And,
right.
But they loved it. And they were like, wait, it's not over? It's been on for 3 hours. Why isn't this thing over?
Yeah.
He's like, why do you still have that ring? It's been 3 hours.
Get rid of the ring.
But there was this interesting thing. And but then it's right after Spider-Man. Two Towers really exploded.
Yeah.
Because people like saw the first one. They were like, all right, what's this going to be? It was kind of the Dark Knight of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And I don't even think Two Towers is the best movie. But I think what it proved is like, oh, this series is going to be really good.
Yeah.
Because it didn't drop in the second one.
And I had no idea about Lord of the Rings. I was
the same way. I had no idea.
I had read it as a kid.
I thought it was like, all right, so someone wrote an original screenplay. Okay. And then they were just like,
this was a spec.
No, this is like, they like, I had this girl that like spoke Elvish. Like she knew the language. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's like a whole thing.
And for me, it's just like, I don't know how other people feel, but like when something like this happened, you start talking to people that like love the books. And which actor? There was an actor who played Sauron.
Saruman?
Yeah. Oh,
Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee. He's like, oh, I read the Lord of the Rings once every year. And I was like, holy cow, this guy's really into it.
Yeah.
And you start figuring, like, and then the culture of the Lord of the Rings started, like, everyone was just proud to be, you know, to, like Lord of the Rings. You started seeing more Lord of the Rings attire coming out.
Yeah,
and then
especially in cosplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you talk to them, and you're like, oh, you like the movie? It's like, I read the books. And I was like, there are books? And they're like, here's The Hobbit. And I was like, what's a Muppet? And they're like, yeah, here's The Hobbit. And like, it was insane.
The Muppet Show. Yeah. Jim Henson created it.
Yeah. Right. It really makes me wonder, both of these, you're talking about being exposed to it as a child, reading Lord of the Rings as a bedtime story, reading The Hobbit as a bedtime story, reading the Spider-Man comics when you were a kid. I wonder how much of the love for these movies is built into people's, you know, childhood nostalgia, because I think that's what inspires the curiosity to go see the movie. It's, I remember this. What's it going to be like now?
Yeah, maybe that's a big part of it, is the nostalgia. How, you know, it's like...
Well, how was it when you saw the Avengers assemble on the screen?
It was awesome. It was like the greatest movie that ever was made.
There's a thing. I was talking to someone, comic book writer, and we were talking about movies and seeing like these comic book movies coming out. And he goes to me and he goes like, you know what? One of the moments I could clearly, without a doubt, go to, and it makes me smile, is going to see Superman for the first time. And when you saw the symbol go up on the big screen, it's like, wow, they really made it. And sadly, when I went to go see Green Lantern, I'm like, they're going to make a Green Lantern movie.
Right.
Aww. And when I sat in the theater and I saw the Green Lantern symbol go up and and it goes all green and everyone's lit up with green light, I was like, here we go. And then I was disappointed. But
you in America.
But the thing is, it's just like, that's like, I love when the Lord of the Rings came out. I love have all these people, like I said, that didn't talk about Lord of the Rings in public, started talking about it, and it was so intriguing to me. And then, like, I started finding out about books that were written that take place before the Lord of the Rings, and like what the world was like before, and how the map of Middle Earth formed, and all these other parts of Middle Earth they never covered in the movie. And I was just like, "This is amazing!"
The whole
and
like,
I would have never known any of this had it not been for the movie.
Yeah, it's funny because when you were talking about Star Trek, about how you and your dad used to watch Star Trek Next Generation, that was Tolkien for me and my dad. My dad loved those books. And when I was a little kid is when they did the animated versions, like the Rankin-Bass Hobbit, the Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings, which aren't great. But like we both loved them, and that was our thing. And then because Star Wars, he would take me to Star Wars, you know, like I would take Ben to a Pixar movie.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, that movie was well done. It's out of his head. He was into Star Trek in the 70s, kind of when the whole groundswell of the fan thing popped up. And he really liked Spock. And I'm like, oh, this is something we can share. And he took me to Wrath of Khan when I was a kid. And I cried because Spock died. Aww. And when Next Generation started, I'm like, oh, we can do this. And he was done.
Yeah.
He was already done with Star Trek. And he's like, he's never watched Next Generation. He's never watched
it. Has he seen the new movie?
I don't even know that he has. The last movies we watched together, like I was at his house and we watched Dark Knight and Indiana Jones and King of the Crystal Skull. And he hadn't seen either of those.
Yeah.
And he liked both of those. But I don't think he's gone to that. But that became our Christmas tradition, was every year when Lord of the Rings would come out, that was the only movie we would go to see together.
Yeah.
And it was like, sometimes like we brought all the family with us who wanted to go, and sometimes it was just he and I. And that's, and unfortunately, we were planning on going to The Hobbit this year, but as you guys know, my family's from Rockaway, so Hurricane Sandy just like stopped everything cold.
Really do anything.
Yeah, so just it's like that's
plans away.
So, yeah, exactly.
That's not funny.
Wow, too soon, Dave. Too soon.
I let it go. But that was something like literally, like he had to go. They're in their condo in Florida, And like he called me and he was like, I just saw it. And I was like, I just saw it. And we had the phone conversation about it.
Yeah.
And then I can show it. And Ben's only 6 years old, but he did the whole Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah. And there's movies. Nothing in Hobbit that, you know, he would
no, the as, Hobbit's not know. As scary. I thought, okay, when we get to the Balrog, he's out. When we get to the spider, he's out. And yeah. He was like, he was in it the whole awesome. Way. And he loves, and it said he loves everything except Star Wars. Although he, Friday actually watched all of Star Wars.
I was gonna say, oh, there wow. you go.
He give wouldn't admit he liked it, but then if I left, if I was there, he was complaining because he likes to play with the Star Wars toys, so he wanted to bring up the big Millennium Falcon. So I put in the Blu-ray, and he's like, ah! I'm like, you're playing with him.
Just watch it while you're playing.
Yeah,
with
he's
it.
Better in my head, Dad.
He was literally sitting on the living room floor with Millennium Falcon in front of him and Chewbacca in his hand, going, I don't like Star Wars.
It's like, you should take a picture of that and put it online. Yeah, it's like the angry Ben with yeah, like a Han Solo.
What are you doing? I was like, you want me to fill a Millennium Falcon with Marvel Universe figures? Because right. I'll do it.
Right, I'll put Spider-Man in the cockpit.
I'm fine with that.
I read that fanfic. You
know? Yeah, that's why I bought the whole 3¾ scale. I was like, Spider-Man can go on the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
But once I left the room, he was just in it.
Yeah.
Like, he heard the trash compactor, and he was like, they were going to squish him.
That's awesome.
Let me ask everyone here a question. Is there a moment when all your friends that you normally hang out, they were just like, oh, I can't believe how big of a geek you were. Like, I know you like this and that, but... Wow, you're like a geek. Where was this? You guys ever have that moment?
I don't think I've had that moment, honestly, only because I've really tried to surround myself with people who shared my interests and understood it. I think the closest I've probably come is telling stories from my convention past. I remember being very young, like dangerously like 14, 16, and getting in a car with a Vash the Stampede cosplayer to go to McDonald's because I was like, well, he's Vash the Stampede. He's so trustworthy. And I look back on that and I go, whoa, I was such a geek that I could have gotten kidnapped. And
he wasn't really bad. Vash the Stampede doesn't drive a Honda Accord.
And so those are the moments I remember is people going, wow, you were really deep into it. But no one's ever made fun of that because we've all always shared it.
Yeah, with me, it was never a surprise. I was always, even at a little age, I was the kid who loved Batman. And then when Star Wars came out, I was like the kid who loved Star Wars. And then I was like the kid who loved G.I. Joe and Transformers. And then by high school, I was just the kid who was into comics. I kind of always had that. It was just, for me, it was always kind of like, how socially acceptable can I be geeky? Like, you know, to me, the thing of the geek and the nerd, it's not so much your interests, it's kind of your social skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we all see people in those crowds at conventions and in the store that really can't quite get a sentence together, you know, can't have a conversation. They're kind of staring at the floor. They're kind of like giggling. That to me is a geek. And that's what I always kind of worked on. I was like, well, I don't want to be that guy because that guy kind of has trouble relating to people. And I always said when I got into high school, I started learning how to play the guitar. I'm like, oh, well, this is the other side. This is the cool side of me. Cause I was into Nirvana and the Rolling Stones and the Who, and you know, like Tough and Black Sabbath. And I was like, I'm into tough, cool stuff that guys who drink whiskey are into. Like,
right.
I'm going to be fine. And I had a girlfriend once who, was talking about, she's like, oh, you like a lot of comic books and cartoons. I was like, yeah, but I also got this rock and roll side. I love guitars and stuff. She goes, yeah, that's also geeky.
Yeah. No. Because it was true.
Because like, I was constantly talking about different pedals and different like amps and tube amps and solid state amps. And it's like, really.
You can be a geek about anything.
Anything. It's there's the more technical knowledge you have about things and the more, like, if you can sit there and talk for half an hour about a fucking pedal for guitar, you're a geek. You know?
It says, like, I have a friend from high school. He's, like, a great guitar player, but I met him, I saw him at the bar, and I'm like, oh, hey, how you doing? And he's like, pretty good. I just played a show over here. And he goes, like, that's awesome. That's a sweet. And, like, I like your guitar, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes like, oh, yeah, I had to get a custom tube. And then here, let me show you the knobs I got. And I was just like,
oh,
man. And he has pictures of it. And I'm like, I get it. Like, you know what? I like a Marshall. I like a Marshall amp. I like a Mesa Boogie head, like cabinet head. Like, yeah, I get that. But, dude, I don't need to know, like, the knobs you got on your guitar.
Because right.
they are a little bit different. And, you know, there's
And people- I've done that. I've swapped out a lot of parts.
That's what I'm saying,
The Les Paul that's in here has, like, half of its original parts because I'm like, oh, this one's got a little more treble. It's like, I need that.
Yeah.
And then you have guys like, oh, you can watch the game, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just like, then it comes to like baseball fantasy and like they start playing their little leagues and talking about stats. And I'm watching football and we were watching the draft. It's something me and my friends do. We'll watch the draft. But I got two guys that will sit there and every time a name gets called, they'll be like, what school he came from? And they'll be like, oh, he came from LSU. And then they try to like outrank each other. It's like, what school do you got? You went to Michigan State. And I was just like, how do you know all this stuff? This is insane.
You can be that kind of geek.
Yeah. But then again, people turn at me and they're like, well, how do you know what all the Infinity Gems do? And how do you know that? Like,
right.
How do you know, like, what issue, Gwen Stacy died or, when Peter Parker changed his webbing fluid to fight whatever characters? And I'm like, all right, touche.
Yeah, Bill Burr had a great joke. He was on The Nerdist a while ago, and he's like, if you heard Bill Burr, he's, you know, a tough guy from Boston. He's really funny, like real acerbic. You'd probably love him, Steven. But he comes on The Nerdist, and he's got his own podcast, but it's like basically him like complaining about his car and his girlfriend.
Right.
And he comes on the show, and he's got this thick Boston accent. He's like, you know, I get it with you guys. He's like, you know, because I know baseball guys that sit around a bar going, what if the 69 Mets went against the 84 Cubs? And what if Derek Jeter was on there? What the manager was, you know, Joe Garagiola? He's like, the only difference is my guys are real.
Yeah.
It's like baseball, it's a good fan fiction.
Yeah.
I do want to point out another variant on your question, honestly, about when did your friends or loved ones discover this about you. My family, I always had Star Wars action figures and stuff when I was a kid, but I think my family assumed I was going to grow out of it.
Yeah.
Like, it was a kid's thing. And so someday I was going to like real girl things. And while I was in college, my friends who might be listening to this have certainly heard this story before. It's like my favorite story. One day I was home from college, and it's as if I was coming out of the closet. It's as if my mother was accepting something much, much more frightening or, you know, scandalous about me. My mother sits me down and she says, Lauren, I just want you to know that if you want to have a Star Wars wedding, I'll support you.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's like, and Will, you know, if you want to have everyone in like costumes and robes, like I'll help dress up your aunts and uncles and we can have lightsabers and it'll be so much fun. And if you want that, I accept that about you. And I was like, whoa,
wow.
You really were hoping that someday
this was going to break.
Someday
yeah.
The switch was going to flip. And it took a lot. It took a lot for you. I'm wondering if she's around with my father. Like, we need to talk to her about this.
Right. Yeah. How many conversations did they have? Or, do you think it's a phase? Do you think she'll grow out of it? It's like, we better just have to talk with her. It's like,
my dad had two talks with me like that, and I convinced him both times. Was when I was 9, he came in and he's like, both times he opened with, your mother wants me to talk to you. So I can tell he wasn't that
cool.
he wasn't that sold in. But the first time he's like, you're 9 years old, why are you watching Sesame Street? And I was like, because the Muppets are hilarious.
Yeah. Come on, Dad, this is funny.
Like, this is great. I'm like, you have no problem with the Muppet Show? It's the same guys. And he was like, all right.
Fair
and
enough.
Then when I was like 13, he comes in, he's like, your mother wants me to talk to you. He's like, why do you still have Star Wars figures in the room? And I was like, well, because, you know, I write stories with him. Like, I'm like, well, what a fan, and Luke did this. And I was like, and then I build from the next day. And it's like, and someday I want to be a comic book writer and do all this. And he goes, oh, that's really good.
Oh, good. You're on the right track.
And he walked out.
Yeah, the closest my dad ever did was he was like, you know, before you could drive, you know, he just drove us to the comic shop and we're getting all this shit, like $20 a week of comic books, and he's just like, well, it's better than drugs.
That's like, what my parents said about cosplay.
And I'm just like, well, you know, he's like, there's worse things you could be spending your money on, and it's like, I guess if that's the closest I'll get to a stamp of approval, it's like, all right, that's fine.
No, oh man. My I made my uncle, he's like driving me home, I'm like, can we stop at Target? And he's like, okay, why? What do you need? And I go to Target and I bought these like toys and I wasted probably $20 to $30. And he's like, okay, David. He goes like, yeah. He goes like, why are you still buying toys? And he goes, it's like he talks about my little cousin who's like half my age. He's like, he doesn't play with those toys anymore. Why do you still play with them? And I was just like, and I was to explain, it's like, I, you know, like I like to, I play with them because the stuff that's on TV is boring compared to like what I'm coming up with the toys. And he goes like, is there something else you do? It's like, well, like what? And he goes like, don't you like sports? It's like, I'm on the all-star team in baseball. And goes like, and you know that, like, you know, like I have like 6 trophies and like, I start naming all, like I played hockey and football a little bit. And he's like, oh yeah, forgot about that. It's like, yeah, you forgot about that.
Because like,
you focus on this.
Right.
What's up? And then like, and it's hilarious because like the reason why I brought that question about my friends is like in high school, I would always, you know, like make Spider-Man references or Superman or whatever. And there's even moments, like, if you pay attention, sometimes when I see something about to fall, I'll make the little, like, web action fluid hand motion to pretend, just in the hopes that, like, one day it's going to...
Today is the day.
Painfully come out of my wrist and catch whatever's falling.
And so you're into the organic web shooters, is what you're saying.
I just pretend that I had the mechanical ones.
Right, they're invisible.
They're invisible.
Beyond Peter Parker's, right? He had to stick him in his belt.
But I wore, like, one style of clothing I would wear is I would wear polo shirts, and I would put, like, a Superman or, like, a Spider-Man Green Lantern Flash shirt over it. And that was, like, my style during junior year of, like, high school. And I, to the point where I saw other people doing it. And still, no one considered me a geek until I went to Fry's and bought those FX lightsaber. And I got a lightsaber, and I turned it on, and I put the batteries in my friend's house. And I turned it on. It's like, oh, my God. And they're just like, what?
Dude.
And I started, like, running around the house, like, twirling. It's just like, when did you become a big geek? And I was like, what are you talking about?
Have you not been paying attention? I've known you since junior high.
And, like, when one friend, like, this is girl that came over, and she's like, oh, yeah, I read Spider-Man when I was a kid. Like, no, you didn't. Like, every time someone said, like, I like comic books, I'm like, no, you don't. No, you don't. And then we're like, let me show you something. And I would show, like, the my comics bagged and board and be like, oh, wow. It's like, you're like one of those guys. And I was like, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Yeah, one of those guys.
But, like, that was the thing. Like, no one knew how big of a geek I was. And I bought that lightsaber when I was like 19 or 20. And I've been collecting comics since, like, forever. And it's just like, oh, what happened here? It's like, you guys just, like, you got, is it like I was gay and just everyone ignored it?
Or it's like, it doesn't click. It's like, Dave's gay. And they're like, yeah, fucking Dave's gay. Dave's been fucking gay for 20 years.
He's been dating gay? That guy for 17 right. years or getting married next week.
Right.
That's funny when you mentioned the FX lightsaber. I've told you this story. It was one time my cousin's a huge Star Wars fan, and when he had kids, he immediately just started bombarding them with Star Wars. So he bought that FX lightsaber one year for Christmas, and we went to the local bar because we knew everybody who worked there. We were always there. And we came in, and everybody's got a couple of drinks, and he's like, let me show you this thing. And he pulls it out in the middle of the bar, and it's, you know, the really heavy one with the metal.
Yeah.
And he turns it on, and he's like, look at this. And then the next guy, like, puts his hood on, hoodie up, and they start fighting, and they're swinging around. And we're in Howard Beach, which is about as New York as you get. And then the bartender, by the end of it, took that little dish towel, threw it down, and went, you Star Trek nerds have ruined Christmas for the last time!
What?
But it was like, that moment where, like, everybody laughed so hard at that.
Yeah.
That it was like, that was the moment where I was like, oh, this isn't okay, because it wasn't backed up with, like, bullying.
Right.
You know?
Well, we had those at the shop. We got, like, two
Mine's
or three of them.
Still at your shop.
Yeah, yours is in the basement or something, or in the closet. We got the FX lightsabers.
Keeping away the rats.
And we had just opened, right? So we were like, we don't know what's going to sell. So we got these FX lightsabers. These are pretty cool. And we had them up on, like, the counter, like, the wall behind the counter. And they were there for, like, 9 months, and they didn't sell. And then we were doing, like, a screening or something for, like, the season finale of Smallville. Me and Doug were behind the counter, and, you know, these things are really boring, so we started drinking. And then we grabbed the lightsaber, we were playing, we ran outside, and we're, like, having a lightsaber fight.
I remember that.
Hitting them together and stuff, and, like, we probably, like, did damage the damn things. Well, then, the next day, four kids came in, and, like, we saw these guys fighting with lightsabers in, like, LaGrange, because it was dark out, and they glowed, like, really good. Do you guys sell those? And we're like, yes. Yeah, they're right here. We sold both of them that week, and I was like, damn. Like, well, there goes, like, done. Like, they're really, really cool.
It was,
but
like,
it's
a demo.
It was like a demo. We just, like, it was like product demonstration. Like, this is how you use this toy.
I think that's a perfect thing. It's kind of, we've gotten to this age where if you, as they say, let your geek flag fly. Of, like, if you show your enthusiasm for it, it becomes infectious.
Yeah.
And I think there's been an acceptance through the internet and through the movies. And I think, I actually think Apple products have a lot to do with it. I think the fact that we're making computers that are cool and fashionable and that everybody wants.
Yeah.
I think has lessened it. And it's like, you know, oh, I got this great phone that I can go on the internet and I can play music and I can talk to my friends. Oh, it's made by nerds. I guess they're not so bad.
Yeah.
I think
yeah, it's like nerds are making all the cool shit, you know?
Yeah. So I think, I think we are living in a golden age.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, you know,
the
you
get golden
like,
age.
The golden age.
The golden age for any independent comic creator is when they get to make and put out their comic, which is exactly what Mike Morrissey and Tim Seeley are doing with their Image series, Hoax Hunters. They came into Camara's Comics for a signing, and Carmelo Camara, who's been on the show a few times and you'll hear him soon, got the chance to talk to them about it.
We had always talked about doing stuff. We knew we wanted to do something, and we were approached with this opportunity to do a backup, and we just kind of said, hey, let's do something together. Let's write something together. So
We've been kicking around ideas.
Yeah, we'd been kicking around, but we hadn't actually worked on anything. I mean, we just had thrown a lot of ideas and stuff back and forth. So this was definitely our first project that we worked on.
Now, the thing that attracted me to Hoax Hunters is how you've set up a story where these characters can have episodic adventures fighting these different hoaxes as we go, but you've also laid the seeds of, like, a bigger story. Do you have that bigger story fleshed out in your heads? Do you know where that's going? Or is some of it, like, figured out as you go?
That's not...
Yeah.
No.
No, actually, yeah. When we did first start doing this, we did have... We kind of laid out like a good, we'd say like kind of like a 20 issue, like this is where we could go, like this is like the bigger scheme of things. But it wasn't, I mean, we're talking just an idea and a concept, not fleshed out stories or nothing like that. But we do know, we see the bigger picture. We just, you know, we did realize that instead of getting too far ahead of ourselves, we kind of laid some little, you know, groundwork early on. We know where we want to go, so now we're just filling all that in.
Yeah, we know what the end point is in terms of, like, this particular big story that, you know, we started to drop seeds in the first arc. But the way, like you say, the formatting allows the flexibility, whereas that we could, you know, insert standalone stuff as well. You know, like, for instance, you know, the next arc, which starts issue 6, like, Haunchyville, that wasn't going to be our second arc. You know, we had something else planned for the second arc, but... We had the opportunity, you know, we had this idea presented to us at actually a different signing, this whole Haunchyville, like the gnomes and the albino of Haunchyville. We're like, that's so amazing. So, like, we're like, we had a great idea with it, so we pushed it up to the second arc. We put, you know, so that's the kind of flexibility we have, that we can kind of, we have like a roadmap, but we can bounce around and have, you know, kind of improvise along the way.
Now, tell me about how the two of you work together. You write this story together, or do you divide the labor between you two somehow? Does one of you physically write it and plot it with the other?
Yeah, Mike physically writes it. We sit down. We think of the idea. I mean, we plot it out. We figure out, you know, we loosely plot the issues. We know, like, okay, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. But Mike actually does the writing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a true, like, collaboration of all the conceptualizing and breaking down the stories, but I'm just the one who does the putting it to paper.
Yeah, because I'm lazy as hell. That's what it's about.
He's above that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't write.
Yeah, writing.
Now, how much do the stories and the adventures for the characters influenced by real myths and hoaxes, or how many of them are just total fictions in your own head?
Issue 0 was made up hoax. I mean, that introduced murder, and that, you know, of course, that's not even based on anything. But issue 1, I mean, the first arc, the mass die-offs, that's a real thing. I mean, we throw in, I guess it's kind of a mix. I mean, the next arc is a real thing.
It's like Law and Order.
Yeah, it's like Law and Order.
It's like ripped from the headlines, you know? Like,
right.
It's a lot like Law and Order. So if you like Law and Order,
you'll like it. It's a big
I had
big
that sense when
there.
I read it, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Steve, you do a lot of art. Have you done anything for the book besides design work? Or are you going to do any interiors or covers?
I did issue 0 cover and the trade cover. So I did the trade cover. I'll do the second trade cover. I mean, I do think, you know, we do realize that that's important part of our book too is because I can do the artwork stuff too, you know, and I just don't have the time to do interiors. That's, you know, I've got a day job plus other stuff I do. I just don't have the time.
Sure.
I'll do covers, pinups, you know, anything like that. So yeah,
and the great thing about that, like, which something now the first trade is out, something that we're really proud of, is that we've established a thematic what's what I'm looking for, like a thematic design throughout, you know, and that's, you know, evident in the first trade, and then we're going to take that into the second trade. It's going to continue. So the entire, you know, when you put the books together, maybe we bind them together, it'll be a consistent design sensibility that I think really makes for the trade a little special. You know, we're proud of the work we put into it because of Steve's, you know, navigation, you know, leadership in doing this, that we've been able to keep a very good visual consistency throughout, and it's, I think it's made a difference in a great-looking trade.
Now, from the writing and the characterization standpoint, you've got some very interesting characters here. It's kind of a motley crew. There's a corpse, there's like a special ops agent, and there's an astronaut made of crows. Is it difficult to write all of these characters as individuals and then interacting as a group?
Yes and no. Getting to know them as individuals was kind of one of the big foundations of what the story is. You know, that's something that Steve and I both put a lot of time in, is to, you know, figure out who these people are, because we wanted to have a story that, while very heavily relies on fantastic elements, you know, of cryptozoology and dark arts and things like that, we also want to have it grounded in a very human sensibility as well. You know, so in order to do that, we wanted to keep the stories very human. I think we did that in issue zero. We had Murder, which was, you know, astronaut made of crows, and, you know, we discover throughout the story that he does have a humanity and a lost wife, and there's something very human about him despite, you know, the supernatural element of what he is. So, I mean, that's what I think enhances what the stories are. You know, without those, without having those characters as being unique, we wouldn't have as strong a story. So it's challenging to write them, but it's also what makes the book special. You know, I think what makes the book special, but the experience of writing the book special.
Very good. I guess one of my last question for you guys is, where are we gonna go next? You got another story arc planned? You got a couple story arcs planned? Like, we're just gonna
keep... Yeah, I mean, we'll do. You know, we've got the next arc. It's a 3-issue arc, and then after that, we've got. We haven't really spilled the beans entirely what we're doing with issue 9, but it's definitely going to be a fun concept. So we're excited, because I don't think we've really seen anything like that in comics terribly recent. So issue 9 will be really exciting, just a one-off, but it's a fun little read. And then the next arc we've got planned to, we'll probably do, you know, 3-4 issue arcs with one shot thrown in there in the mix. So.
Greatest thing in the world.
This week, I discovered that the Godzilla movie with Matthew Broderick is on Netflix. And I must have seen this movie in theaters. And I was like, probably in eighth grade or freshman year. Oh my God, next time you
I heard
shop.
It was horrible. And I
it's
never saw
awesome,
it.
Unless like you're crazy. It's I saw it in like freshman year of high school. I must have saw that like 14 times in theaters. I had all the action figures and everything. And it's just like, that movie had a bigger impact on my life. It's a Matthew Broderick's the star of it. That had a bigger impact on my life than fucking Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's like, this is how important this movie was.
Well, there were no giant dinosaurs in Ferris Bueller.
I know, right? So it's like, how could it?
They just run around the loop. Now, I was like, right. How exciting is that if you lived here?
Exactly. And if
like, I was a kid like, in New York going, wow, there's other cities.
Right. Well, it's like New York is like this magical place where everything happens. It's like a Godzilla monster is like tearing up New York.
It
like twice
all
building
in Times Square, though.
Yeah.
Times Square and Madison Square Garden.
That's all I could film it.
There are other areas of New York.
Yeah. What are they? There's 5 boroughs? What? So that would be my recommendation. It's awesome. It's a great movie.
I recently purchased these. IDW's coming out with these artist edition books. And I recently purchased the John Romita and the Gil Kane one.
You posted that on Facebook. I just
God. They're amazing. They're oversized books. They're what, the original page?
Yeah, type? Basically they're printed. It's the closest reprints you can get to the actual artwork, to the point where it's like, the scans are picking up like the blue line pencil that you're not supposed to. That's like the non-repo blue. It picks up like tape marks, notes in the margins for like flip this panel or whatever. It's like they're fucking gorgeous.
It's funny. Lauren and I were just talking before we started the show. I have one original page in the studio.
Yeah,
and we were saying how these days they do the lettering in computers.
Yep.
You know, the blue lines.
The coloring is all
a
digital.
Lot of times the inks are just on a copy of the pencils. Yep. And you never see that reproduced comic in black and white. And that's exactly what these books do.
Yeah, they're huge. I mean, they're the exact size of the Strathmore boards that like Marvel sends out or DC sends out or whatever. It's like, what, they're $100 or something like that.
Yeah.
They're awesome. They're
and,
like the coolest
and
thing.
I'm a writer, so like when I get a comic book, I just read it real fast.
Yeah,
and then
me too.
For me to like pay attention to the art, it's when I reread it again. But when I open these books out, I must have only read one or two pages in it. The rest, I'm just looking at the art, and it's been I've been looking at one for like 3 hours, and it's great. You like get to see how like they do the layout and how they tell the story all with imaging. And this is like the Marvel way is they draw it first, and then later on they put the wording, right?
Basically, like, the writer gives them, they'll sit down and be like, all right, here's what's going to happen in this story, blah, 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 blah. They tell them the story. And then the artist goes home and paces it out himself and then gives it to the writer, and the writer fills in all the word.
Yeah, and that started because Stanley was writing everything and he
didn't have time.
They actually don't do that anymore.
No.
Joe Quesada ended it.
Yeah. But it's amazing. You get to see it, and, like, it's great. And to tell the truth, if I didn't have anything to do, I would go back to just look at them. And the fact that there's a guy that draws this, and then he walks away from it. I was like, no, you keep drawing forever.
Well, that was funny, because last year at C2E2, Steve and I were walking around, and we went into one of those dealers who had original pages.
Yeah.
And he had an entire John Byrne Fantastic Four. And we just couldn't stop looking at it.
It was
like
awesome.
Even the omnibus didn't pick up the amount of detail that was
on
the page. And John Byrne's Fantastic Four is the next one that IDW is going to get.
Yep.
And I think it'll be the first one I buy.
Yeah.
Lauren.
So my greatest thing in the world this week is probably based on some Stockholm syndrome that I've been experiencing. The gentleman I share an apartment with, my boyfriend, is a writer slash creator of Our Fair City, which is a post-apocalyptic sci-fi audio drama that's very funny and has a lot of amazing social commentary going on, too. Season 3 is airing, and they're recording season 4 in the apartment right now. And it has zombies, it has mole people, it has killer mold.
Everything you want.
Everything you could possibly want from a world devastated by cold and corporate corruption. So go to ourfaircity.com after you visit my blog, of course, and check it out. It's so cool.
Where can we see your blog?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Oh my goodness. Thanks for asking. My blog is called Geek Girl Chicago, and it's my personal greatest thing in the world. You can see it at chicagonow.com. If you just search geek, or you could type in chicagonow.com/geek-girl-chicago. And it's part of the Tribune. And so occasionally I get to be on chicagotribune.com. Please read it.
That's awesome.
That is.
Mine is kind of a cheat because Steven already recommended it on the second show, but I'm reading Marvel Comics The Untold Story by Sean Howe, because both you recommended it and then Mike Lawrence recommended it on our last show, and I got the audiobook.
Oh, nice.
Which is great because I just took a freelance job where I have to drive, and but it's phenomenal. It's unabridged, so it's like 17 hours long.
Yeah, well, if they do like Stan Lee quotes, do they do like a Stan Lee voice?
No, it's a guy just kind of reading it all.
Yeah.
But he'll do like little bits of inflection, but it's not he's not quite.
I wonder if it goes like when it's like, and Stanley said, quote, Excelsior.
It's just really dry.
Face front true believers.
In our next chapter.
Another Marvel masterwork. Another Lee Typhon Kirby masterpiece. Actually, the guy who reads it is really good. And this is the first time I did the double speed on the iPhone for the audiobooks, which is great. Like, I thought it would go too fast, but I had like a big cup of coffee, and at two spot, he kind of sounds like a 1940s radio announcer.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Where he's like, Wally Wood came by and he drew Daredevil number one. And Stan said, fantastic. This will sell a million copies. Daredevil was blind. And I'm like, I'm just so into that pacing of it.
And this just in from the home front, Captain America.
But I'm up to Jim Shooter now. And it was interesting because I just read Tales to Astonish last week, which I didn't like as much. It was kind of a Kirby biography. And it tells a lot of the same stories, but now I'm at the point where Kirby's really not a part of Marvel.
He's gone, yeah.
So I'm away from all the old stories and into new stuff. I can't wait to get to like the 90s and beyond.
It's pretty awesome.
I think so. Well, this has been a great show. Want to thank Lauren for coming in.
Thanks for having me. It's been so fun, and I can't stop twitching from all of the Frappuccino.
Now, mission accomplished.
Now, Lauren, you mentioned your blog. What about Twitter?
I'm on Facebook and Twitter. The Twitter is just Geek Girl Chicago, as is the Facebook. So I try to put a little bit of original content on each one of those outlets. So if you subscribe to all three, you get to see
the complete picture.
The complete collection of what I plague the internet with.
The full Geek
every
Girl
day.
Profile. As always, you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. We also have the Caffeinated Comics page on Facebook, so like that. If you are subscribing on iTunes, take a moment to click some ratings and leave a review. Dave?
I'm on Twitter as Dave Redfield. I had to look on my phone to actually remember what I
should. We have three podcasts where you forgot.
His own Twitter account.
Is it one word?
Shoot. I have no idea. Why not? It is one word. Or whatever the underscore or little hyphen is. Whatever.
Yeah. Steven?
19 South LaGrange Hill.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!